So metta. Why metta? Why are we here? This afternoon I was looking through the reflections and questionnaires that you filled out, and I appreciated the answers to the question, what is your intention for being here right now? What is your intention for being here right now and practicing, coming to a metta retreat specifically, and practicing? And on every retreat, especially, I mean, everything we do, but especially every retreat, I think it's very important to be connected, to stay connected to our intention. Why are you here? So as we start, I would like to invite you to actually close your eyes for a moment, if you would. Dropping into your body. Dropping in. Feeling your breath moving through your abdomen. Feeling your body seated. And letting the question be dropped in. Not so much in a heady way, but dropping in the question into your body. And seeing what comes up, letting the question be, why am I here? What is my intention for being here? What do I hope and aspire to through this training, through this practice? And bowing to whatever answer came up, acknowledging, appreciating, and letting it go. And now dropping in the question into your body, deep into your belly, just letting it sink in and listen for what comes up. Let yourself be surprised. Why am I here? What is my highest intention? We're taking 7 days to devote to being here. And just wait to see what comes up. Maybe something, maybe nothing. Maybe the answer will surprise you. Bow to the answer, whatever came up, something or nothing. Letting it go. And Tatyampi, for the third time, allowing the question to really be dropped in, and as if you were a hollow bowl, a bell, let it resound, make a resounding sound, listen for it, listen with your whole body. What is my highest intention for being here? Why am I here? Why this? Why now? What is my hope? What's my aspiration? What is my deepest intention and desire? a part of being human, my humanity. Listening deeply. Why am I here? Why? Why this? Why here? And bowing, appreciating whatever answer came up. And really respecting and valuing whatever came up. And in fact, I would invite you to maybe write that on a little piece of paper somewhere. And keep that in your room. So that in the next few days, next days when there will be ups and downs, when you will be sitting with yourself, face to face with yourself, and doubt might come up, difficulty might come up, question might come up, why the heck am I here? Then you'll see that little piece of paper and it will remind you of your deepest intention. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this. It'll be your North Star, your intention. And mind you, your intention, your aspiration, is very different from your expectation. Very different. Expectation is experienced as being more heady, like expecting. I expect to do this, or for this to happen, or this amazing thing to happen, or for me to feel universal, absolute love for everyone and be one with the universe, expectation. It's more kind of the weight of it is above the neck, it's expectation, heady. Whereas aspiration is in your heart, in your whole body, it resonates. It's what you love, it's what you want for yourself, it's what you want for the world, it's what is deeply meaningful to you. It's different. So pack up, wrap up your expectations, bow to them, put them aside, because this retreat might be completely different from what you expect it to be. In fact, expect it to be different from what you expect it to be. Because it will be. Every retreat is different, even if you've sat 100 retreats, you know by now. Every retreat is different. Actually, if you've sat that many retreats, you know not to expect anything because you've seen. It's usually in the first few, you've sat a handful and it's like, oh, that retreat, that amazing thing happened. And oh, maybe it'll happen again this time and this time I'll do this. And like, nah. Bow and honor your aspiration and respect whatever windy road it might take. You might be here for X. You might be here for something different and something else will present to yourself and perhaps you'll be upset. Darn it, I came to work on this thing. But guess what? Whatever shows up is your path, is what you need to be with and work with. Maybe you came here to develop samadhi, concentration with metta, and maybe some sadness or some lack of forgiveness of yourself or somebody else really comes up strongly in this field of metta. Okay, that is your work. That's what needs to be sat with. That's where you need to develop metta, compassion for yourself and others. So trust, respect whatever shows up to you in this practice. So metta, this wonderful word, metta, from Maitri or Mitra, the various roots, translated often to loving kindness, which is a funny word, loving kindness. We don't quite have it in English. Loving kindness. How about just kindness or just love? I like those. I like to translate it as love also because it is love. There are so many different shapes and forms of love. It's also translated as friendliness or care or goodwill or warmth. Any of those, and those are the different flavors of metta that can come in for you at different times. So feel free to use the different words at different times when you're relating with your experience, like loving yourself or being gentle with yourself, caring for yourself, you know, having goodwill towards yourself, being friendly towards yourself. Whatever works for you at different times, or towards others also. So, the story goes the way that the teaching of metta came about. And whether the story, by the way, is true or not, who knows, and it doesn't matter. And you might have heard the story many, many times. And again, I'll invite you to listen to it for the reason, for a different reason why I'm sharing it this afternoon. So the story goes that the Buddha first thought metta meditation as an antidote to fear. He had sent a group of monks to practice deep into the forest, in a particular forest. And that forest was inhabited by tree spirits that resented the monks' presence. So they decided to scare them away. So they transformed themselves into ghoulish visions, made terrible shrieking sounds, and created awful smells. Sounds pretty bad. And the monks were apparently terrified and fled the forest. And they came and begged the Buddha, please, please, they begged, send us to meditate anywhere but that forest. And by the way, please see the metaphor in this story, right? It's the things that we're afraid of, that we run away from, right? They make ghoulish sounds, they stink, right? We run away from them. So see the metaphor besides the delight of the story, the good story. So the Buddha said, I'm going to send you back to the very same forest. But this time I'm going to give you the only protection you need. And it's said that the Buddha gave the first ever teaching of metta meditation, and he encouraged the monks to recite the phrases of metta, but more importantly, to actually feel the heartfelt practice of loving kindness for the tree spirits. So this one, like many good stories, has a happy ending. It's a satisfying story. The monks go back, they practice metta, and the tree spirits were so moved by the energy of the loving kindness that was generated that they decided they quite liked the monks after all, and they wanted them to stay, and they started to serve them and protect them. And they lived happily ever after in the forest, and that forest unpracticed. So again, whether this parable is true or not, but really the inner meaning is a mind that is imbued with kindness, with metta, with loving kindness, feels safe. Fear does not penetrate. It's a sense of safety that's offered. Safety, you offer safety to yourself, you offer safety to others. It's a sense of non-harming. And it is an antidote to fear. If you are ever afraid, do some metta for yourself or for others and see how it feels. It feels like water on hot coals. So a sense of safety, sense of safety. In fact, the phrases, the kind of the classic phrases that we offer for practicing metta in the West, and you might have your own phrases, so feel free to use them. So the phrases, the four phrases are, may you be safe from inner and outer harm. That's the first phrase, has to do with safety. May I or may you be happy and have joy in your heart. Short form, may you be happy. The long form, I like adding joy. The third phrase having to do with physical happiness. May you be healthy and strong. And the fourth one having to do with just ease. May you have a life of ease. May your life flow with ease. May you take care of yourself happily. So when I was a beginning practitioner, it always seemed kind of odd to me that the first phrase is about safety. What's up with that safety thing? And actually I used to put the may you be happy to be number one, may you be healthy number two, and safe, I kind of stuck it to be number three for a while because it didn't seem very important to me. Like safety, what's up with that? Then it was through practicing intensely that it really showed up for me why safety is number one. This feeling safe, making yourself, supporting yourself to feel safe, offering safety to others. Sense of safety is so basic, is so primary. That's only in the container of safety is when our heart can relax and be happy and feel healthy and ease of life flowing. And it can also, you know, you can think that it, the sense of safety, the in terms of attachment theory, Bowlby's attachment theory with children, if there's a sense of safety, there's a basic sense of safety, happiness can arise more easily. So offering that safety for yourself through this practice and to others. So a few words about this practice. As you're sitting, walking, continuing to practice, it's not about fabricating something that's not there. It's not a fabrication. It's tapping into what's already there and fanning the fire. So that's why earlier this morning when it was asked where to start, do you start with yourself or do you start with benefactor? And start where it's easiest. Start where the embers are brightest and you can fan the fire. And as the fire gets bigger, then you switch the other category. Okay? So you're tapping to the feeling of care and warmth that, and goodwill that's already there, love that's already there, and expanding it. And also speaking of expanding, for those who are new to this practice happens in ever-widening circles, which we will walk you through in the next days, you start where it's easiest. And traditionally, the practice starts with yourself. You start with yourself. But in the West, we sometimes, you know, we actually always allow for people to start with the benefactor or dear friend, wherever it's easiest for them, because sometimes folks can have, you know, maybe a difficult relationship with themselves, acceptance. So start where it's easy and then you can switch to self. It doesn't really matter. And then, so I'll tell you the traditional order, self, and then a benefactor, and then dear friend. And after dear friend, you have a neutral person. Someone that you kind of know, you've seen around, but you don't have a feeling about them one way or the other. So that person is a stand-in for all of humanity, the neutral person. The category after neutral person is someone you're having difficulty with. In the texts, it's your enemy, but we don't have enemies these days. People we're entangled with, right? We're having some difficulty with. Maybe they're a friend before, but now. And then the category after that, when we completely expand, is all beings everywhere. And there is formal practice with the phrases, tapping into the feeling, sensations. And also there is informal practice. The informal practice, you will actually tell you what, we'll talk more about informal practice towards the end of the retreat, because that would be a great way to take the practice into your daily life. So we'll just talk about formal practice, because that's what we're here doing, formal practice, dedicating ourselves to it. And it's also thought to be a purification practice. So what does that mean? And this is a really, really important concept to really get a sense of if you haven't already experienced it today. So metta, you can experience cycles of purity and purification through this practice. So cycles of purifications where a lot of difficulty, perhaps difficult memories or difficulty with yourself, lack of forgiveness and sadness or anger, and just all of this is coming up. Say you're doing metta for your benefactor, and may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be well. And all of a sudden you remember, oh, that one time 20 years ago when you really needed help, you called them up, they were not there for you. And you haven't remembered this for 20 years now, and all of a sudden you're angry. You are aflame. Whoa, where did this come from? Come on, here I am on this retreat. I'm trying to open my heart, and here's this anger. I don't want you, anger. Go away. Guess what? That's what needs to be there. It's something that perhaps is not processed, and to sit with, to work with, to have kindness and compassion for yourself and for what is coming up. That is your doorway through expanding, through deepening your practice. You might have been on the surface and you thought, oh yeah, it's groovy, I'm feeling love. And then when you drop under the surface, things that need to come up will come up. So respect that. Don't treat it as a problem. It's not a problem. It's what is the doorway for you to deepen your practice. So whatever comes up, whether it's boredom, whether it's anxiety, whether it's fatigue, whatever it is, it's not a problem. It's an opportunity for you to practice with, practice kindness. How can I be kind with this? How can I be kind to myself? How can I be kind? What's the kindest thing I can do? How can I work with this? Challenge yourself to deepen your capacity to be with what's difficult. Or it could be pain, physical pain, a chronic pain that's coming again. Oh, I thought I was rid of you. And here I am trying to deepen my concentration practice, and my neck is hurting so much. I hate my body. It's letting me down. Ah, well, guess what? This is the opportunity. How can I be kind to this body? How can I be kind to this pain? How can I have friendliness? Here you are, pain. Here you are. Born of causes and conditions. How can I have ease and freedom in the midst of what's happening? Not in spite of it, not pushing it away, but in the midst of it. How can I love? Not like. You don't have to like something to love it. It's not about liking, it's about loving, which is very different. There's this quote, let's see if I can find it quickly. I had it. It's oh, here it is, yeah. It's loving what is. This is something that the teacher Byron Katie, that's her phrase a lot, loving what is. And I love this quote from her. She says, I'm a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality. So see if you find yourself arguing with reality. And again, it's opening, as Bhante was saying this morning. Acceptance is love, opening to, being with, allowing is an aspect of love. And there's so many different shapes and forms of love. We often think of the word love only reserved for romantic love, but there's so many different shapes and types of love. In fact, the Greeks had 8 different words for love, 8 different types of love. I'll mention them quickly because I think it is relevant, just to make a difference between, a distinction between them. You know, there is eros, which is erotic love. We usually think of love, oh, falling in love, romantic love, which is actually more sexual passion and desire. And then there is the second type of love is ludus, which is the playful love, which is the close cousin of eros, which is a very playful form of love between young lovers. And then there's mania, still we're in the same category, mania or obsessive love, manic, being manic, which again, relate, it's when eros and ludus go completely off the rails. So that, when we think of love, we usually think of those types, but there's many other types. There's philia, affectionate love, which is philia, friendship, and the ancient Greeks actually valued philia far above eros because it was considered love between equals. Then there is storge, familiar love. It's a love without physical attraction. It's kinship, familiarity, love between parents and children or siblings. There's pragma. There's enduring love, love that has aged and matured over time. And it's beyond the physical, it's transcended the casual. And it's this type can often be found with married couples who've been together for a long time, and their friendship really has endured for decades. Now, after this category, we're getting to something that's now closer to our concept of love. One, the 7th type of love in Greek is philautia, which is self-love. And it's not narcissism, it's more the equivalent of self-metta or self-compassion, which is caring for yourself. Caring for yourself as a way to prepare yourself to care for others, you need to fill your own cup first. You need to love yourself first, accept yourself first, in order to be able to love and accept others. Not to forsake yourself for the sake of others, but to really take care of yourself. In fact, by taking care of yourself, caring, loving yourself, you are caring for others. Again, very different from narcissism, but it's a deep sense of care for yourself as a basis for caring for others. And we come to the eighth type of love in the Greek paradigm, and that's agape, which is selfless love. And this is what is most equivalent to metta, which is a radical type of love which is unconditional, boundless. It's not sentimental, and it's not conditional. It's not attached to outcome. It's not transactional. It's not, oh, I love you, so you do this thing for me. If you know, you love me, I love you. It's not transactional. It's acceptance. It's a different kind of, the word is completely overloaded, this word love. But agape or metta is that kind. So metta, coming back to the word metta, it has a far enemy and a near enemy. So this is a good time to highlight this, given that we now have all these words around for different types of love. So metta is this unconditional care, friendliness, warmth, regardless, completely regardless. So the far enemy in the texts is basically the opposite. The opposite of love is hate, is ill will. That's the opposite. That's pretty easy to grasp. The near enemy, what's the near enemy thing? Okay, so the near enemy is what masquerades as the real thing, but it's not the real thing. Okay. So what masquerades as metta, but it's not metta, is love with strings attached. Is love with that kind of attachment. Lord, I want this. It's not unconditional. It's not, I just care and have warmth for you or for all beings. So, and also another way to think of about the near enemy is love with expectation of outcome. It's metta with expectation, with attachment to outcome, is not metta anymore. It's no longer metta. For example, if you're sitting here and practicing for your benefactor, may you be well, may you be safe, may you be well, and expecting them to be safe and happy and well, and calling them at the end of the retreat, so I did lots of metta for you, are you better, are you recovered? It's attachment to outcome. That's not why we do this practice. We do this practice without attachment to outcome. We do it just to open our own hearts. And again, even that we do without checking every 5 minutes. Okay, am I more kinder now? Am I happier now? It doesn't happen that way. In fact, do the practice. Think of it as planting seeds, one little seed at a time, and you don't know when these seeds are going to flower. You have no idea. There's a wonderful story by Sharon Salzberg, known as the Queen of Metta. She tells this story more than any other story. And I loved hearing her tell it when I taught with her, retreat with her a few years ago, hearing it from her own mouth. So, the very first time that she did a metta retreat, she was at IMS and had started IMS about 40 years ago now. And she decided to take, I think, 7 or 10 days and just do metta. So she she does the practice, and at the end of it, she feels nothing. You know, she's doing it pretty dedicated, and she feels nothing. And it is said that she reports she felt absolutely nothing and found the whole endeavor excruciatingly boring. And when she tells the story, she said, "Well, that was a, 10 days wasted. You know, I don't feel anything. I don't feel any kinder, any warmer, and just like, ugh." And then, while she's preparing to leave for a trip, she drops a vase, and the vase shatters. And what comes up in her mind is, "Oh, Sharon, you're such a klutz, and I love you anyway." And she gets stunned, like, wow, that practice did something. That the "I love you anyway," that acceptance, wasn't there before. It would have been just like, "Oh, Sharon, you're a klutz." Whereas, "Sharon, you're a klutz, and I love you anyway." It does something. And this practice, I've seen it over and over again in myself and in others, doing the practice. And it comes up, it shows up when you least expect it. When you least expect it. I have so many stories. I have stories of myself when I least expected myself. You know, there was one situation where I was actually being attacked verbally, and it was a very difficult situation. And having reflected on the situation, I think the response of my heart really surprised me. My response was, yeah, I forgave the person and turned around and gave him a gift, not because I was trying to trick them, but it was just the natural response of the heart. It surprised me. It really surprised me. I was like, what? What? They were just attacking you. Like, they're being mean and nasty, and you're forgiving them and, like, coming, like... So I'm not sharing this with you to say, hey, this is me. It's this practice. It's amazing. It transforms your heart in a way. And of course, in that situation, it completely got transformed because of the response I had in this situation. So this practice changes you in the ways you cannot even expect. Heraclitus says, expect the unexpected, otherwise it won't happen. Coming back to the expectations. So expect the unexpected. I know. This practice is pretty amazing. So hang in there. Hang in there in the next few days. There will be ups, there will be downs, there will be cycles of purification where you might be sitting in fire. You may think, oh, get me out of here, and stay. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to the fire. How can I be kind in this situation? So there will be purity and purification. And purity will be the times that, gosh, this is so sweet. I could sit here and just practice metta for the rest of my life. Please, the bell, please don't ring. I'm in the zone. Don't ring the bell, right? You will go through those periods of purity, purification. So I like to offer a supportive mnemonic that you might pull out of your tool belt over the next few days to support you for this practice. So what I've come up with is an invitation for you to practice metta with grace. G-R-A-C-E. With grace. I can just leave it there to practice with grace. And the G stands for gentleness. Be gentle with yourself. Especially this practice of metta is a practice of gentleness. You can't practice kindness with, I'm going to sit here and be kind. It just doesn't work, right? Last night, I suggested, okay, today you're going to be tired. If you need a nap, it's okay. You have permission today. That's a way of showing gentleness to yourself, doing this practice gently. And also G is overloaded. G also stands for gradual cultivation. It doesn't happen overnight. You get into the practice, into this retreat gradually. Be patient with yourself. Gradual cultivation. Gradual. Give yourself time. The R stands for receive. Receiving metta is just as important as giving metta. And in fact, for many people in the West, receiving is harder than giving metta. Receiving, soaking it in, allowing it to come in. Receive metta. R is again overloaded. It also stands for relax. The practice of metta, you really need to be relaxed. Whether you're practicing it for purity, purification, or if you're practicing it for samatha, for concentration, your body needs to be relaxed. It's very important. When the body is relaxed, the mind can relax and soften. G-R-A. A stands, again, it's overloaded. It stands for accept. As Bhante this morning was saying this morning, acceptance is love. So accepting, allowing what's here right now. Can I be friendly? Can I allow? Can I accept what's here right now? Whatever it is, not be confrontational. Not fight with reality. A also stands for arrive every moment. Every moment in a new arrival. If you find yourself having wandered off, your mind having wandered off, instead of kicking yourself or having fallen asleep or whatever, no need to kick yourself. Arrive in that moment. Because if you start to kick yourself, oh, that was terrible, I did this and I shouldn't have, and you're throwing perfectly good moments after moments that are already gone and wasted. You're wasting. So arrive this moment. Okay, this moment is fresh. I arrive right here. Fine. Great. Arrive every moment. The C in grace is perhaps the most important in this retreat context. C stands for continuity. Don't start and stop the practice. This is continuous practice. As you're sitting right now listening to the talk, continue to practice. When you wake up, go brush your teeth, start your practice. When you're going to the bathroom, you're practicing. When you're doing your yogi jobs, you're practicing. Continuing to practice every moment. It's not like you close the door of your room. Ah, I'm done. Okay, take care. No. Find a different way to practice. How can I practice? Continue. It's nonstop. And the E is also very important. This practice is an embodied practice. To feel it. It's an embodied practice. Feel it in the body. It's not heady. You're not just going to say the words and may you be well, may you be happy, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't quite work that way. It's an embodied practice to really feel it in your heart, in your body. Let it resonate. And again, I want to end the talk with aligning with your intentions. Jack Kornfield says, in the path with heart, in the stress and complexity of our lives, we may forget our deepest intentions. But when people come to the end of their life and look back, the question that they most often ask are not usually, how much is in my bank account? Or how many books did I write? or what did I build, or the like. If you have the privilege of being with a person who's aware at the time of their death, you find the question such a person asks are very simple. Did I love well? Did I live fully? Did I learn to let go? With that, let's just sit together for a minute and let the words settle. May we all learn to love well, to live fully, and learn to let go. Thank you for your kind attention.